If you have not opened your book to John chapter 9, I would encourage that right now, because we're going to go through this. Excuse me. Through the experience of a blind man, we learn about spiritual blindness and what it takes to gain our own sight. John does a very interesting thing here. He gives us six different settings, or six scenes, if you will, to demonstrate this notion of the darkness, really, that blinds every human soul. It's kind of like a play. Six different scenes, and we move from one scene to the next. The narrative sort of starts its course with Jesus and ends with Jesus. But if you will, think of it as a one-act play in six scenes, if there is such a thing. But it is just sort of one episode that moves from beginning to end. So let's kind of see it that way. We're just going to look at each different scene and discuss them. Let's kind of see what's going on. Clearly the lesson here is that only in Christ is our blindness removed. But the whole dynamic of that is what's interesting. And that's what we look at. So we begin with scene number one, where Jesus encounters a man who's been blind from birth. And it simply starts by saying, as he passed by. I don't know if this was just sort of an afterthought in Jesus' mind, but as he passed by, it says he saw a man blind from birth. So he decides to do something. Actually, he's prompted to do something because of a question that was asked by the disciples. And they say, who sinned this man or his parents that he was born blind? You know, the question is really, well, who was at fault here? What caused this to happen? And Jesus has a very interesting answer here. He doesn't really give us an answer to this bigger question. You know, does sin cause this kind of thing? Which is really the big question they're trying to find out. Who was at fault? What caused this? And Jesus simply says, well, God is going to use this man to display his works. That's why he's the way he is. Maybe that raises even more questions about why God would do that, you know, to bring about these great works of himself. But the fact is, Jesus really does not answer the deeper question of guilt and fault finding. He just says, I'm going to use this guy to display the works of God. And so Jesus gets the man and he applies some mud to his eyes using his own saliva. And I've always thought this kind of an odd way to go about it. He doesn't just put his hands on the guy. Maybe he wanted him to go away by himself and have to be healed later without Jesus being there. I don't know, but I'm sure a reason why he did it this way, but he just applies this mud to his eyes, tells him to go to the pool of Siloam and wash his eyes. So he does. And he comes up seeing. Now, you know, in our perhaps human interest in this story, we might ask the question, what was it like for him for the very first time when he opened his eyes? You know, to all of a sudden be able to see. What's that? Is that a tree? I've heard about those. I felt them, but I don't know what I felt the shade of them. What was that look that person just gave me? I don't understand that. You know, and you can imagine what's going on in his mind here. John does not go into any of that. It is not of his concern here. This human interest side of it really isn't his concern at this point. It's really secondary to the events that are about to unfold. And that's what John wants us to see. And so in scene 2, verses 8 through 12, he goes back to his old neighborhood. And a dialogue takes place. People see him. Somehow they figured out that he's able to see. I guess he's told them. He says, is this the blind man that we've known all of his life? And he says, yeah, it's me. Well, how is it you can now see? Well, Jesus healed me. Well, where is he? I don't know. This scene is really just one of surprise and confusion. There's a lot of talk going on among the neighbors in the neighborhood. And they're trying to figure out, how did that happen? You know, it's probably one of these situations where, you know, you think to yourself, well, how do most people react when we encounter someone that we haven't seen for a while, and they've really been changed in a way? Not just visually, not just, you know, they got gray hair, they're older or something, but they've really changed their lives. You know, the person that wasn't living such a great life, suddenly they figured it out somehow. and they're living a good life. How did that happen? And, you know, you talk about it. It's surprising. You know, it kind of goes beyond your expectations. And here, a guy with a physical deformity suddenly has that changed. And so that's a little bit difficult to deal with. You don't know how that happened. Well, the reactions to me in this are very interesting. Their reactions, in a way, are kind of neutral in the sense that they're not angry at him. They haven't sort of some inbred prejudice about what happened, not believing that it really happened. Well, they're kind of struggling with that, but they're not angry. They don't seem angry at the guy. But the one thing we don't see in this scene, they also don't express any joy on his behalf. They're more perplexed than they are, wow, it is really great that you can see us now. If they said it, John doesn't tell us that. All he says is they're all talking about it, they're all perplexed, they're confused, how did this happen, blah, 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 blah. You know, and nobody says, man, I'm really glad for you. We don't see any of that. But we move there very quickly to scene 3. This is a scene before the religious authorities. So the guy's been healed, he's gone back to his neighborhood, and they take him over to the authorities. You need to talk to this guy. So they brought him to the Pharisees. And we don't know whether the religious leaders demanded to see him at this point, but somehow he got there. They took him there. And what's most interesting about this particular scene is what becomes the issue. The issue here becomes the Sabbath. His healing takes a secondary role in this part of the narrative, in this scene. And isn't that odd that a guy who's suddenly become able to see what's important here is Sabbath, the regulations that were broken as a result of this? No joy on his behalf. No, like, wow, that's pretty good. How did that happen? But isn't that kind of classic blindness? You have to hide the real issue behind a secondary one. And you actually kind of hide behind that secondary issue in order to avoid confronting the real issue. People do that all the time. The secondary issue becomes the issue. And so the leaders interrogate him based on this particular issue of Sabbath. Now, they're divided over him. And I find this rather curious as well, that not everybody in that leadership meeting was against Jesus, or I should say, they weren't not for him in a way. Some reject him clearly, outright, for not keeping the Sabbath. You know, this man is not from God, or he wouldn't break the Sabbath like that. That's the conclusion that some of them come to. But some of them wonder, at least out loud, can a sinner really do that? Now, these are probably guys in the leadership circle. They're wondering out loud, can a guy who's a sinner really do that? Well, in a way, they kind of shout him down, I think. Or they kind of shout them down. You know, there was division among them. You kind of see the initial intimidation factor beginning here. They're wondering out loud about that, but they never really come to the conclusion that, yeah, we know that a sinner can't do that. He must be something more than that. They're kind of wondering it out loud, but they never really concede the answer. They never really come to the conclusion that I think he's a prophet. And my suspicion is they're intimidated by the leadership. Even though they're a part of it, they're intimidated by others in the leadership. And so what do they do here? They throw the issue back to the guy. Back to the man who was healed. Back to the one they're interrogating. Well, what do you think? You know, let's let you trap yourself in whatever answer you give us. Well, he draws the conclusion for them. I think he's a prophet. Isn't it interesting that he's the only one that has the courage to admit what really happened and why it happened? A guy who was blind, probably not terribly well educated, had this experience with Jesus, and he says, you know, he's a prophet. How could he be anything other than that? Is the conclusion that we get here from him. He doesn't say it that way, but I think that's essentially the conclusion. Well, our play's not over yet. Because now we go to a scene with his parents. They bring his parents in. And they asked the parents, how does he see? Well, his parents get caught in this equivocation as well. All right? Just like the leaders, they're kind of afraid to admit the plain truth of what happened regarding his healing. And John tells us why they do that. John tells us that they're intimidated, and you know, if they agreed that Jesus was the Christ, they would be put out of the synagogue. And so they defer also to their son. Well, ask him, he's of age. You know, we're going to step back from this. We don't want to admit it because we know, you know, we're intimidated by this whole thing as well. Everyone keeps dumping the responsibility for concluding who Christ is on his shoulders. They're all afraid to come to the conclusion that is really the most logical conclusion of the whole thing. And you see, clearly there is a factor of intimidation at work here. Again, verse 22, John shows us that. Nobody wants to admit it because of all the peer pressure that's being put upon them. His parents are afraid. Even the leaders who saw something in Jesus were afraid. They may have asked the question, but they didn't want to come to the conclusion. You see, Jesus has become a flashpoint of division. As John seeks to demonstrate, in this whole thing, I think, he has exposed the blindness of humanity. They can't see it. Probably they don't want to see it. Most likely they're just afraid to admit it because of what everybody else is saying. But we move once again back to the interrogation room in scene 5, verses 24 through 34. And so they put him, you know, and you can just imagine, I've watched too many detective shows or something. So I imagine him sitting in a room, you know, where they've closed the door and they're, you know, they're all in there and he's on the hot seat, you know, and they're trying to get him to admit this, that, and the other thing. And this is kind of cool because he doesn't back down in this scene. They say, we know this man is a sinner. What they don't say is because he healed on the Sabbath. Again, they're hiding behind the secondary issue here. And all he says is, well, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. I just know I was blind, but now I see. And sort of implied there is, I can't deny that. How can you? They persist in going down that same road. And once again, they ask, well, how are you healed? Well, you know, you almost want to cheer at this point because suddenly somebody in the story has found some backbone. He's always had it, but he's really found some backbone here. And he stands up to him and he says, you know, why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples? So I've already told you. You know, what is this all about? You know, why are you going through all this? And in verses 30 through 33, listen to what he says. And you tell me, should these guys have known this or not? Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know, and he includes them in that, we know that God does not listen to sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. Now, you know what? He kind of nails them there. He nails them in the sense that he gets rid of the secondary issue of the Sabbath and moves them back to the primary issue. This guy healed me of my blindness. He will not allow that first issue to go away. They keep wanting to say it's about the Sabbath. He says, it's not about the Sabbath, and you know it's not about the Sabbath. All right, that's very much implied by his reply here. We know this. You know this. Why are we talking about this? They are blinded by their own preconceptions and their own sinful hearts. They react, by the way many people react when they are wrong but refuse to admit it. I had a discussion one time with one of my sons. We were talking about when one of the referees in a game makes a bad call and somebody calls him on it. You know, they react worse if they know they made a bad call but have to stick to their guns. You know, they really do. That's when they really get angry and they really, blah, 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 and they just, you're not going to change what the referee did. There's no question about that. But I think he was right about that. Very often they react the worst when they know they were wrong. These guys know they're wrong. And they refuse to admit it. And so what do? They revile him. They mock him. They mock the one who told them the truth. And they throw him out. Who are you to teach us? How dare you? Well, they got caught. I think they knew it, but did not want to admit it. They knew he was telling the truth. They knew what he said was true. And they couldn't tolerate him telling them the truth. They couldn't tolerate the truth in their own hearts. And we conclude our play with scene 6. Jesus returns, verses 35 through 41. Isn't it fascinating that Jesus has been absent from this play except for the beginning? Physically, he's been absent from all of what's going on here. He's not, how should we say, theologically absent. He's there because he is the issue. He is the issue because he started this whole mess by healing this guy, by displaying in this man the works of God. And that was the real issue. Jesus hasn't even been there throughout this whole thing. The guy has never seen him. Literally has never seen him. And so now here Jesus returns, he finds the man, and he says, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man believes when he tells him who he is, and he worships him. Simple matter. How could he do otherwise? Logically, you see, the whole thing is around whether or not Jesus really did this, and whether or not it was because of who he was that he could do this. It's a very logical conclusion to draw that if he can open the eyes of a man born blind, he's got to be something more than just another human being. Nobody wanted to admit it. The blind man, absolutely. How could it be otherwise? But you see, the whole purpose of this incident was to demonstrate the power of Jesus' actions to bring about more than physical sight. And that's what Jesus does here. He's trying to demonstrate that he can do more than just provide physical sight. The entire episode has revealed the darkness around men's souls and the power that darkness has over them. And the number of ways they try to avoid the light. See, Jesus came here and he really pierces the darkness in a very powerful way in their lives. And they can't see it. Or maybe we should say, they kind of don't want to see it. If you ever, I don't know if you're talking to somebody or you hear some of the arguments going on in politics and various things, and you just kind of go, it just seems so logical. How come they can't see it? It's what seems logical to us, just kind of makes sense, and you sort of draw that conclusion that just seems to be a very natural conclusion. And the reason that people can't get things, not necessarily because you're right or you're smarter, but something that seems obvious is not because people are stupid. It's because they are blind. That's the problem with humanity. Jesus really uncovers here what's wrong with us. We are blinded by sin. And we cannot see until we come to Christ. We simply are not able to see who we are and how we behave until we come to this one who was able to open the eyes of a man born blind. And that's really what Jesus tells us here, isn't it? That's the conclusion that he comes to. Those who think they are already enlightened, their guilt remains. But he came so that the blind can see. And it's not just physical blindness that he came for. The whole episode tells us that. His healing uncovered a deeper kind of blindness, a lack of sight. And so Jesus came to open the eyes of blind people, of human blindness. The man's blindness served a very particular purpose in God's plan, and we go back to verse 3 and just how this whole episode started. The works of God were on display here. And the rest of this play illustrates reactions to what God in fact is doing. Piercing the darkness shakes everything up. The one man who sees clearly is the one who was blind. Even his answers demonstrate more enlightenment than his neighbors, his parents, or the leaders involved. In essence, we learn that Jesus' work is to give sight to the blind. And indeed, it is one of the paradoxes of our faith that if we first admit our blindness by coming to Christ, that's when we gain true vision. That's when we can see the world in truth and the way it really is. If we refuse, not only do we remain blind, but we also remain in our guilt and in our sin. Only the truth will set us free. And so, it's our message. It's the message of the church. It's the message of the Bible. It's the message that we believe in here. That we want people to see the truth about their blindness. We want people to believe in Jesus to alleviate the blindness. And we want people to regain their sight. And so we encourage people, come to Jesus. Believe in Him. See what He says. Compare it to your own life. It's difficult because you may not always like what you see, but the truth is there and the truth will set you free. Let's stand together and sing.